Welcome to the Next Brave Thing podcast. My name is Ella Hooper, and I believe that breakthrough is on the other side of bravery. This podcast features brave stories, emotional health, and creativity to inspire you to take your next brave step. Happy New Year, everyone. Welcome back to the Next Brave Thing podcast. If you didn't notice, I actually took the last couple of weeks off because it wasn't really an intentional thing, but I realized I needed a bit more time to think through what kind of podcast I'm going to put out in 2025. And I also felt this thing of like, there's so much noise around Christmas and New Year's about new year, new you, and what are your five goals for 2025? And here's some life hacks to transform your life in 2025. And there's actually nothing wrong with that. I think that I'll probably do that next year. But I just think sometimes there's so much noise at this time of the year that I almost wanted to like let the dust settle and then release a podcast. So maybe on January 1st, you got out of the gate full of inspiration and that dopamine hit of I'm going to go to the gym and I'm going to do 10 minutes of writing every day. I've just read Atomic Habits and I'm going to implement these habits. And then we're towards the end of January and you're like, I haven't done any of those things. I actually want to talk about self-sabotage today and the road to transformation, which sounds a little cheesy, but I want to talk about those things today. But yeah, I'll start with sharing like where I really want your input. You guys have been probably, some of you have been listening from the start and it's really cool. And I love hearing from you when you're listening to my podcast. It really, really means so much. And so, yeah, I guess you can go ahead and like and subscribe and download and share with your friends. That really helps me out in getting the podcast out there. But I kind of was, to be honest, a little stuck on what podcast I'm going to put out there. I actually love talking about emotional health and mental health and hearing stories of redemption and overcoming and all of those things. And I was thinking like, I want to be a bit more intentional about, yeah, just what I'm putting out there and doing a few more solo episodes. And then I realized I've been teaching a class called The Wholehearted Artist on emotional health for the last over 8 years. And I've taught a lot out there. And I have all this content that is just available to me that I have been teaching a long time. And, you know, when we started the conservatory, it really was an experiment lab and an amazing place to trial and error the theories that are out there in the world. Because I think that what I notice is we have our TikTok therapists and we have all these bite-sized like content out there that it gives language to maybe what you're going through, but then we're misdiagnosing people. We're misdiagnosing ourselves, and we're actually, we haven't tested out our theories. And so the beautiful thing about building a school and being in community and leading people was I got to test run a lot of theories and fail a lot and get it wrong. And so I felt like I want to put content out there that I've actually really wrestled through and I've got my own conclusions about, and they've been inspired by either pastors, researchers, mental health professionals. And I want to invite you into what I've learned because I wish I had have had that many years ago. And I know there's so much podcasts out there that do that thing, but yeah, I just felt like, why not share from my perspective all the things that I've learned and are continuing to grow in? And I think that is the biggest thing that I hear when I meet with clients is, I've already dealt with this. I don't know why I'm still struggling with this. And I think there's some sort of illusion still out there in the world that we arrive at some point. And I think the more knowledge I know, the more I know, the less I know. And it's actually really great to take that posture of humility and constantly being a learner rather than a teacher, even though I'm going to teach you what I know. But I'm also going to have guests on that I can learn from and you can learn from, and we can go on that journey together. And we're going to start really unpacking some like concepts that you might learn in therapy. We're going to just kind of like break it down to kind of give you real life practical examples so that you can like start to embody that more in your own life. And so this is my first just checking in and catching up, but this is the first Christmas that I've had in Australia in a long time. And I've had so many winter Christmases, and I remember my first ever winter Christmas, and that was nearly 11 years ago, me and my friends, we all went up to a cabin in the snow, and it was so like, I wouldn't have had language for this, but it was the most regulating, calming. It was like we were all in this cabin and in our own bubble, and like nothing else existed outside the bubble. And there was so much joy and amazing conversation and great food and laughter. I don't think we had access to Wi-Fi or a TV. So it was just games and connection. And I just look back on that memory and I think like that was the first Christmas that felt like, you know, when you've had some hard Christmases, you're like, or some lonely Christmases, when you actually have a really connected one, it actually sets a tone of like what's available for you. So anyway, this past Christmas is probably one of my, in my top three favorite Christmases. And it was so beautiful to be with my family. We did a whole Christmas Eve breakfast with all my family and watching the little nieces and nephew with gifts, and the delight and joy around that was so special. And I was really conscious just to like be really present and enjoy it and take note of it. And then on Christmas night, we had a dinner together, all our family. And it was a lot of work, especially for my mom, my brother, and my sister. But they were amazing and they were incredible hosts. So it was very, very special. And I feel really, really grateful. And it's been a really sweet time. So I think when I think about goal setting for 2025, and I really do feel, even just spiritually, I just think that we're all stepping into a new era. And I felt conscious of that in 2024. It was like so many of my clients, myself included, there was like a big transition in 2024. So some people were leaving jobs like myself, moving countries like me, or just so much change. And I think that that brought a lot of just emotions around change and transformation and feeling out of control and not knowing what's happening in the future. And how do we, you know, sometimes like you can sense that transition is coming in your life and you really want to get your ducks in a row. But sometimes like you can't get your ducks in a row and you really just have to do the thing in front of you and not future trip and try and plan your life too much. So I think that lesson of like, cause I am such a goal-oriented person, like I love to focus ahead. And a lot of what I planned didn't happen. And so there was the processing of that. And, so coming into 2025, I actually feel fresh hope and expectancy and really, really excited about it. But I'm also conscious that I think I can only sense and feel the next 3 months, like what I'm doing. And I love to put things in place that make me feel supported on my journey. And I mean, I meet with a life coach and I have a counselor myself, but I also like to put things in place that actually give me a focus, because sometimes I can get so distracted and not stay on task and have these intentions and then not follow through. And so my focus for the start of the year, especially the first 3 to 4 months, is to really, I'm launching my own Artist Way group, and I'm having, because I miss them, my alumni students from BCA all join. And we had so many people want to join that we're going to do 2 groups. And so that goes for 12 weeks, and that will actually help me be creative, but also means that I can connect with some of my past students, which is really sweet. And then I'm also doing a course that's really focused on, and I think it goes for 12 to 13 weeks. And it's really focused on somatic and really learning how to integrate your body, your emotions. And it's a course called Reclaiming You. And I'm really excited to kind of learn more about our body and somatic, like how our body really affects how we process emotions and all of that thing. And I really do that because I want to, I'm actually not doing it. Everyone's like, that's really good for your business. And I'm like, yes, but that's secondary. Like, I'm not the sort of person that wants to learn something to teach you. I think I used to be like that, but I don't have a need in my heart that needs to teach other people because, and this kind of segues into the topic that I want to talk about, which is really about embodiment and integration, really going from head knowledge to heart knowledge and really going on a journey of practicing what we preach, you know, not being just these people that know concepts and have all this knowledge, but really lack wisdom or the knowledge of how to implement it or you're a chronic procrastinator. I wanted to kind of talk about that because I think that, you know, so many of us, like I actually get this quite a lot is, oh my gosh, so-and-so in my life, my sister, my brother, my mom, my parent, my friend, my coworker, they really need to see you, Ella. And we really want our friends and we want other people to like get fixed, but we don't really focus on ourselves. And what I have learned in really being a student of transformation for the past 10 years is that most of our transformation is caught, not taught. So when I see someone that's fully embodying freedom and confidence and things that I want to have and cultivate in my life, that propels me to be like, well, how do I get that? Versus you really should see someone about that. And I've been guilty of telling people to do that too. So I'm in the same camp. But like when we do that, we like, no one wants to feel like they're broken, they need to go get fixed, and that someone superior is looking down on them. And here's all the information that you should do to change your life. You being fully free and whole is the most attractive thing to a person and accessible because they can go, yeah, you were kind of a mess and now, or you were super judgy and controlling. Now you're really, really kind, but truthful and you've learned to work out that tension. And now I feel really inspired to be around you. And I'm actually asking advice because I really see that you have authority in this area. But anyway, so I noticed that we have so much information and even in following different psychologists or accounts on social media, we can get like terminology like, oh, that's gaslighting or that person's a narcissist. And we can kind of intellectually know things, but true embodiment is quite a journey. That actually is where the work is done. So I notice also, like, especially coming into a new year, we have to really look at what's driving us, you know, what motivates you, what makes you want to set these goals? Like, what's inside you wanting to lose weight this year? Like, what is the thing that's driving you? And I always think of, I notice I'm a bit of a prover, like, let me prove you wrong. Like, and it's interesting because living in America for so long, I kind of like, there were certain things in my life, I just didn't feel like I have to prove anything. Like, I don't feel like I have to prove anything to my bosses. I don't really feel like I have to prove anything. But when coming back to Australia and I'll be around someone and I'll notice like, oh, I just feel like I have to prove myself to this person. Oh my gosh, I didn't even know that that was still a thing. I thought I'd settled that question. And it's funny how that thing pops up. But when I think of proving, I think of the episode, or not the, when I think of proving, I think of the movie with Elle Woods in Legally Blonde, where she's at, it's such a popular movie, so you probably know it, but yeah, Elle Woods, played by Reese Witherspoon, is at a party where her ex-boyfriend is, and she gets the wrong information and she shows up in this bunny outfit. And so she looks ridiculous because she's the only one in costume, and her boyfriend Warner is there, and she realizes and she says to him, "I'm never going to be good enough for you, am I, Warner?" And then she like kind of goes out of the party, and this music, and then this montage comes on, and the music I think is called, or the song's called, like "Watch Me Shine." And I know so many people, and I've been that person, where we want to prove people wrong, and that is our road to transformation. Is like, if I get the hot body, then I'm going to win my ex-boyfriend back, or if I achieve this at my workplace, then I'll prove Dad wrong. If I do this, then I'll prove that I'm worth being heard. And I think that like that might be a good place to start to kind of get you moving, but then it's not sustainable, because what if you don't prove them wrong? And what if you don't prove the thing that you're trying to prove? And so we really want to look at, and our culture actually makes money off that idea, you know, because it's so in our human fragility, like in our human hearts, to kind of like try and prove people wrong. And I think even as being a woman, sometimes I've felt that like, oh, I've got to prove myself to this person. And there's such a tension inside proving, because when you think about it and you go for a job, you actually do need to prove that you have what it takes to do the job. Like that is a real thing. But there has to be an elevated perspective on that. And we have to be able to reframe that, because yes, logically, you actually have to show up to your job and perform. But but when it becomes about our identity and we actually have something more visceral behind that, and when we have such a huge spiral when we're not proving ourselves in a position, that's when we really want to take a look under the hood, so to speak, of our souls to actually look at what's happening inside of ourselves. One of my favorite words is the word embodiment. And the definition, according to Google, is the tangible or the visible form of an idea, quality, or feeling. And I love this word because I think having an acting background and training for it to be an actress for 3 years and working in a conservatory, watching my students literally transform in front of my eyes in their acting ability is, and I'm so fascinated in it. And I'm so fascinated, I think, from a storytelling perspective of like what drives the character, why do they do what they do? But then I also love the artist's journey of transformation. And as they go from, you know, and I used to think this, I'm such a great actress. And then you go to drama school and then you realize, wow, I'm actually really terrible. And I really, how I thought I was coming across in my mind is not what's translating on the outside. And so acting is actually a lot more challenging than it looks. There are some unique individuals that naturally have it, and they actually just need a few tweakings and they've really naturally got it. But most people, when they're learning to act, are very like all in their head, and they actually don't, they kind of like, they know, they might watch YouTube clips on how to act, but they actually don't know how to act, or they might read a book on it, but they're actually really not connected or know how to do that. And I think it's a very, very similar with emotional health. Most people start off having sort of like, yeah, I know that, but they don't know it. It's another thing to practice it. And so this word embodiment is so beautiful because it's actually like sometimes it's the intangible as well. It's just the essence and the presence of a person where you can feel like, wow, they really embody wholeness. And when I'm around them, I can actually feel the weight of that around them. And because sometimes I notice, like especially in my early years, I'd feel like this person's like saying all the right things, but there's something off here. And now I've kind of learned like, oh, there's something is what's called, like, there's a dissonance. Like, there's, you know, when there's a dissonance in music, it's like clunky and you're like, oh, that's not fully like it. And I was also thinking, like, we kind of look to things, like we kind of copycat what we want to embody until we actually embody it. And so there is an element of you're faking it till you make it, where there becomes a real groundedness and authenticity in your transformation. You know, so let's just say you're trying to be confident and you kind of copy every person that looks confident until you start to actually do the inner work and there's like an inner safety that happens and you start to feel confident. But me and my friends actually recently, we were all, you know, having dinner and we're chatting around the table and we're talking about this particular leader that embodies just the most beautiful qualities in a leader. And I know a lot of leaders can have, I mean, a lot of people who are being led by someone can feel like they have an absent leader or their boss is just not present and doesn't acknowledge all the hard work they're doing or doesn't just check in and be like, hey, how are you doing? But we were kind of talking about like different styles of leadership and this one person who just really embodies a presence that when they walk in the room and they look you in the eye and they ask you how you are, like 2 seconds, and they might literally spend 2 seconds with you, but you feel instantly known. You feel so safe. You feel so seen. And we were commenting about this particular leader, like they don't have to like go out for coffee with me and like chat and try and, you know, spend hours and hours of time to make me feel seen and known. It's something that they've just embodied. They just carry this quality. And we were talking about like how attractive that quality is. And, you know, I think when I first started being a leader, because I was around a lot of leaders like that who are really special, amazing leaders. I think I've had the privilege of really being around some of the best leaders in the world, I think. And you kind of get around that and you think like, oh, I want to be like that. And so we think, oh my gosh, I'm going to really learn to be present and like do that. And there's sort of this performance aspect that kind of happens and it's not intentional. But then what you don't realize, and I know the person that they were talking about, they've actually gone through tests and trials and failures as a leader that has caused them to do a lot of deeper work that when they do that, it's very authentic and very almost like they've gone through the trial to be able to embody that kind of authority. And so a lot of us kind of get stuck short in different moments. Like as soon as the test comes, we stop being that person. And I'm not talking about, you know, pretending that you're that person when, you know, life's not going well. But I think that like those people out there are guideposts for us and they're invitations that we can also have access to that embodiment. And it's not that we're trying to be like that person. It's actually we're looking at like, what do they represent? What do they carry? What are the ingredients that they embody? Whether it's kindness or a sense of compassion that they embody, and how do we cultivate those things in our life where we actually show up that way as well, but also like starting with ourselves. So that kind of leads me to like a lot of people who really are authorities in the emotional health world or spiritual health world is because they've actually gone through trials. They've taken risks. They've actually gotten a little bit wrong to get it right. Whereas like I hear people who are experts or know-it-alls or, you know, we found this, like I went to a ministry school and you're hearing auditory, like you're learning and hearing and absorbing all this, you know, ideas about what it means to be a good leader, but then you become judgmental of people around you that they're not doing this, they're not doing this, but you've never actually fully led yourself. Because I remember even having that kind of pride, like, oh, I know everything. And then you get in a position where you're really tested and then you really see what you know. And so in school, and this leads me to my next point of tests and triggers and trials. In school, we really, to show the teacher how much we know, we take a test. And that is in life. You know, when I hear people say, why am I still struggling with this? I dealt with this. I already worked through this. It's often because they haven't recognized the tests in their life where that integration usually gets furthered. And so we have these moments in our lives where we're tested in the thing that we believe in our heads, but in our hearts, we're learning to embody more. And so I'm going to do a whole episode on tests and triggers and trials, like, and knowing how to actually move through them, because that is where your integration point, if we think about like, well, how do I integrate? Maybe I'll, you know, meditate more, or maybe I'll go to my therapist more, or that's how I integrate. It's usually in the resistance moments in your life, or the tests and the triggers, and also the risks. Like, where are you taking risks and taking actions? Because that's when the rubber hits the road, and that's where you either fail the test and you have to. And the good news is, it's not like pass fail. It's like you will get to take the test again. You know, some of you are in patterns and cycles with relationships, with people, or even in your jobs and dynamics where you're like, this is happening to me again. And it's because you're like, when you view it as a test, it's almost like, I kind of view it as like, not that I play video games, but it's kind of like Mario Kart. Like, how do we like overcome this test? Not that you really do that in the game Mario Kart, but it's kind of like, how do I overcome this test? And how do I really learn, like, oh, I'm really integrating this belief system in my life. So getting to my main point on self-sabotage and like getting around that, and, you know, tests expose our subconscious beliefs. So we have our conscious beliefs of like, yeah, I agree with that. Like, I agree with like that podcast. I agree with that sermon. I agree with like these ideas out there. You might agree with them, but you actually don't embody them. And so there is, our subconscious world. And there's a scripture out that says, you know, everything I know is wrong, I do, but the thing I want to do, I don't do. And it talks about like that internal conflict of like, why am I, you know, doing this thing that I know is not good for me, but my best intentions are to do the healthy thing. And I think what it is actually because we haven't dealt with our subconscious beliefs. These are the beliefs that we're not fully conscious of. And I describe the subconscious as like the storage unit of your soul. It's where all of your memories live, where your we have a subconscious narrative that maybe we know in our heads is not actually truth, like capital T truth. And we're like, yeah, I know that's a lie, but there's something in my body and my heart that believes it's a truth. And that's where our subconscious is. And so when we don't process our life and make sense of our story and make sense of our childhood, all of that is like shoved into our subconscious. All of our painful experiences, we often, you know, we're not taught how to deal with pain. And in the coming episodes, I'm actually going to talk you through how to deal with pain. We don't know how to deal with pain properly. So we actually don't know how to end pain cycles in our life, and we shove them down. And then usually because they're undealt with, we find ourselves looking for comfort in all the wrong places because we don't know how to make sense of that trauma or the pain that we've gone through. And when we talk about our subconscious, I've taught this class for so long, like sometimes I'll get deadpan, like people just shut off. Some people will fall asleep in the class. Like, no one likes talking about pain, and no one likes to talk about the negative things in our life, but they are subconsciously ruling you until you start actually digging into these areas. And you actually want to dig into those areas with someone who has the skill set to help you through that, because it can be overwhelming. So if you are someone who has a lot of trauma in your life, you know, it would make sense that it's almost like your past or your subconscious is like a crime scene with like, you know, that tape that's like, do not enter, don't come in here. But unfortunately, the reality is there is evidence in that crime scene in your soul that, using that analogy, that we actually need to sort through, to make sense of, to bring love in, and to bring healing in. And so it makes sense that initially your reaction would be like, don't want to go there. And that is so normal and that is so fair. And so it's important to go on a journey of like building safety in your life where you feel safe enough to start talking about that in certain context. Because then what will happen is it will feel lower stakes and then it'll become kind of like almost like a hotel room where it's kind of got a do not disturb. Like we won't necessarily go into that room just yet, but we'll kind of start to approach coming around and talking about those memories or those things in your life that have created this pain. And so in these memories and in these stories that maybe we've, you know, shut down or put locks on the doors in our hearts, like we're not entering those places, lives our core wounding, so our core beliefs. And so our core beliefs actually drive so much in our life. Our core belief will drive our thoughts, which will drive our emotions, which will then in turn drive our actions. And so it's not our conscious mind that drives our behavior, it's actually our subconscious mind that drives our behavior. And so in order to heal our subconscious beliefs, we actually need to have someone actually coach us. Like my coach is really good at working through my limiting beliefs and getting articulate about it. And usually your whole body will resonate like, yeah, that feels like it's truth, even though it's not truth. And so having someone that can actually help you articulate, these are my core lies that I find myself, like if I'm tested, like if I'm in a moment where in my workplace, like, and the same thing happens, like this core wound will be hit on. And so core wounds can sound like I'm not good enough. It can sound like my needs don't matter. I'm unworthy. My voice doesn't matter. I'm not worthy of being heard. I'm not capable. I'm powerless. So all of those, there's a lot of actual core beliefs, and it's good to dig into like what kind of viscerally stands out to you. And then you start to do the work of healing and integrating a new truth. And neuroplasticity, there's so much out there on building new pathways in your mind, because when we don't have, you know, the Bible talks about taking thoughts captive, like we actually need to take the subconscious ones captive, because we can consciously know the scripture, we can consciously know some positive affirmations out there, but it's really digging into our subconscious world. And the ones that make the most impact, and this is what psychologists say, is from 0 to 12 is usually where we make these big core beliefs. And so when we're a child, we actually think in absolutes. We don't really know complexity and nuance. And so we will make big statements and actually put big labels on ourselves where there isn't complexity and nuance. And so an example might be like in school, you're not really smart at maths like me, and you take away from that I am dumb, I'm not smart. But then we don't know the complexity of nuance, but actually really quite good at English and you're actually quite good over here. But we make these labels, and then there's like a ripple effect of that belief system that affects every area of our life, whether it's finances or relationships. Well, I'm not really smart at relationships. I'm not really smart at finances. I'm not really smart at managing my calendar. Like, and it starts to infiltrate every area of our life until we get to the core root belief of what we actually believe. And so a lot of you actually really will know that, but I think we don't know how do we change our subconscious? And the thing that what informs our subconscious is usually we had a big emotional experience or with repetition sometimes. And that's why sometimes it's really hard and you find like, why am I struggling with this again? It's because it was like a really big emotional experience. And then there was repetition of it. And so maybe your childhood, you didn't have necessarily something big and traumatic happen, but maybe you had repetition of criticism from a parent or something like that. And so then it's really hard for you to connect with kindness because there's been repetition in the area of criticism. And so that is like the beautiful thing is, and this is what a trauma therapist said to me once, is like the cool thing is like you actually learned all this behavior, you can unlearn it. And so the healing journey is about unlearning the pathways in our mind, the way that like we're unlearning all of those things. And we are basically needing to have a lot of repetition. And so in certain areas in my life, like I, you know, there's a scripture that says, consider it pure joy when you face trials of many kinds because you'll be mature, complete, and lacking nothing. And I'm butchering the scripture. But basically, it is joyful when this happens because I think that God knows we need a lot of reminding and remembrance and repetition. That's why meditation is super, super powerful. The Bible talks about meditate day and night because we need to renew our mind. We actually need to consistently focus on this. And the way that we can start to integrate a new belief system is through visualization. So visualizing certain things. But also tending and bringing compassion to the wounding that happened in those memories. So like actually having some inner child guidance and compassion, and then repetition. So you would need a lot of repetition to kind of reinforce this new belief system. Otherwise, your brain's going to reject it because your brain goes to what's familiar because it believes it's safe. And so an example I use all the time is like if you're in an abusive relationship and then you break out of that abusive relationship, you'll often get into another abusive relationship. It just has a different outfit, so to speak. Like it just looks different, but it's the same kind of abuse. And we do that because our brain only knows that as safe. And so what I've been learning so much about is learning how to cultivate safety. And so it's really breaks my heart when I see people who are very black and white and like, this is the right way to behave and you should be doing this and this is right and this is wrong. And we're like verbally correcting people all the time. My heart breaks for that because usually even if they're the most passive person, very sweet, they usually know like they're being criticized, like they know the right thing to do, but often is like they've not felt safe enough to take action to do that. And so it's even like in your workplace, like you know the most highest version of you, the most authentic, whole and worthy self would ask for a pay rise, but your subconscious self-worth is kind of like, but that doesn't feel safe. I could get rejected. And so what you're wanting to do is learn how to build an internal felt safety, not, hey, you don't feel safe and you've labeled that you don't feel safe. What is it like to feel safe in your body and fully at peace and your shoulders aren't as tense and you feel resourced internally to be able to do that? And so really like self-sabotage is really our internal, like it's like parts of us are at conflict within each other. And this is something that I am wanting to further myself is to actually have all the parts of me on the same page. So the part of me that wants to be fit and healthy, and then the part of me that wants to feel free and flexible, like I want all of that to be in sync and on the same page. And there's this really beautiful quote that by Dr. Kate Lemon. It says, coherence is the symphony of self, where all the parts play in perfect harmony. And so that is what like real safety is like your spirit, your body, your soul, your heart, your mind, you're all in agreement. And that is when you've been doing the healing work, where there's like peace, where you can kind of have, you know, not move through life feeling reactionary and actually have noticed like something toxic in front of you. Maybe it's a toxic, you know, it's kind of like these tests show up as little invitations, like, am I going to get sucked back into that thing? And by me knowing that there's a place where we can actually feel really in synchronicity within ourselves and even the spiritual world, it actually feels like wholeness. That feels like peace, being at peace in yourself. And the more and more you do the work, and when I say do the work, I'm usually meaning not just listening to podcasts and getting information. I'm talking about actually having really great spiritual leaders in your life, because the spiritual side is where the power is, because you can have great tools, but no power behind it. So the spiritual side is really where the power is going to be. And so like when you can have that in your life, you will start seeing synchronicity happen in your life, where you start sort of attracting this new way of existing in the world, and people start showing up with you differently, and things just start to feel a little more peaceful. And it's not like this perfect place where all of your life, like my life is not perfect, guys. Like it's not always living like this, but I can anchor back to this place and be in this place. Because to me, freedom has looked not just like, oh, I left that job and now I feel free, or I left that relationship and now I feel free. It's actually like that thing that used to trigger me, I don't feel as triggered anymore. That's what freedom is. Like, oh, I used to want to avoid that person or that personality type. Now I feel really confident and I don't feel fazed by that anymore. Oh, I feel an internal felt safety to take some risks and do that acting class or that cooking class or start that blog or start that business. I'm starting to feel an internal felt safety. So I'm going to be playful and take a risk and be bad at something for the first time. So that is when your subconscious is starting to be worked out, made sense of, compassion's brought in, light has gotten into those dark places. You know, I really believe that we can live in the light fully. And when the light is so surface level, if you're not actually digging into your subconscious, if you're not digging into that place. And so that is such a beautiful place to come to. And that's why you would go through and face the pain that you're all avoiding, you would face those things because that is the place that you can get to, and the place of clarity, which is just such a peaceful place to be in. And so when I was training to be a Pilates instructor, I'll leave with this, like when I was training to be a Pilates instructor, and bar instructor, the teacher spoke about these four stages to transformation. And it really is such a helpful analogy. And actually, it's almost like it imparts a grace for you to know that the change that you're seeking and looking for this year is going to be a process. And then it'll actually have compassion on people around you of like, change is actually really hard. Like we really want other people around us to change, but when we actually try and do it in our own strength and we try and change something about ourselves, like it's actually quite a process. And so hopefully this kind of understanding the four stages of competence, it's called, we'll just kind of release and impart some grace for you. So we kind of start off in our learning journey. So even me learning to be a Pilates and bar instructor, and we start off unconsciously incompetent. We don't know that we're doing something wrong. Or if you've never taken an exercise class, you start like I do reformer. So it's like if you do reformer for the first time, you're not going to know what you don't know. Like you don't know that maybe your spine's out of alignment and you're doing that move wrong. Like you need a teacher to kind of bring awareness to that place. So we start off unconsciously incompetent. We don't know what we don't know. Then we go into someone, a teacher or someone highlights, hey, there's a blind spot here. We all have blind spots. Then we go to conscious incompetence. We realize we don't know what we're doing. We know that we're doing it wrong, but we don't really know how to fix it. And then we go to conscious competence, which is we're learning and practicing the skill that we've learned, but it takes a lot of focus from us. Like you're trying to, okay, I know I'm supposed to do this, but I have to be really intentional about focusing in on it. And then we become conscious competent, where we're consciously doing the thing and we're totally competent. We don't even have to think about it. It's like, you know, the first time we start driving, like we're so incompetent. And then by the end, we're like, oh my gosh, how did I get here? I kind of like just drove here and I don't even remember like how I got here, you know, which is a bit dangerous. But anyway, I use that example a lot when I'm working with clients who are working through people pleasing. Like for me, people pleasing, I had heard that term so many times before, but it wasn't until you have pain come up in a relationship and you realize, oh, I've been doing this every area of my life. And I've been so unconsciously incompetent about it. I didn't even know I was doing it. And most of us are doing that in our life. Like no one is fully self-aware. And so then I became consciously incompetent. Like I would notice this thing in me that would want to people please, and I would start doing it and I would know that I would be doing it. I'm like, why am I promising this? And why am I saying this to this person? And I can't take it back, but it's happening. And so this is where we need to have compassion and grace for ourselves, because we are to implement a new thing. It really does take a lot of tests. And the good news is the tests come back around again and you'll probably have to try it again. And so then I become consciously confident of like, no, I'm not going to say anything right now. Whereas normally I would jump in and people please and fawn and make that person feel great, but I'm not going to do that right now. And then you get to a place where you don't even do it at all, or you do it a little bit, but you've broken free to the other side. And so that is really the roadmap to transformation and freedom. Well, at least a little bit of a guidance, but I wanted to kind of kick off this year to really go on a journey of really slow growth and compassionate growth, and not this proving growth that I talked about earlier in the podcast, where we're hustling and proving our worth to try and get and win the thing that we want in our life. And we don't want to throw out the baby with the bathwater, because it's like healthy striving, there's healthy going for goals, but we want to start getting really good at understanding why we do what we do. Anyway, so my heart for sharing this is really that you would come into a year of cohesiveness and synchronicity in your life, where things just kind of start lining up because you're living in your truest identity and you're living in your highest self and your true self. And so if you are interested in getting coaching, I'm taking on new clients. I'd love to meet with you. I do a 20-minute discovery call. You can always book in there. And stay tuned for exciting things that are coming up this year. I am really excited to be launching a few things, and stay tuned for that. Follow me on Instagram at Ala Hooper or at the Next Brave Thing podcast, and make sure you subscribe, like, do all those things that you need to do. It helps me out. And I'm excited to come back with next week more of learning about wholeness and integration and embodiment. But thanks for listening today, guys. Have a wonderful week.
Thanks for listening today. Please download, share with your friends, and write a review. If you would like to book in a life coaching session with me, go to my website at www.ella-hooper.com or follow me on Instagram at Next Brave Thing Podcast.